Hello and welcome to Spiritual Table Talk. Today's topic is you're addicted to your problems. As always, you can subscribe on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And you can send a donation to the temple at $HectorSalva. That's via Cash App, or help at Mystical Work via PayPal. And so earlier today, I was having a discussion with someone about how people are addicted to their problems and how even when someone has absolutely no problems, they start to make up problems simply because they get bored. And so everyone has this common lie that they tell everyone that they wish they had no problems. Yet the moment that happens, they don't last very long without problems before they start to make shit up. They start to make problems up. The example I used this morning was basically, let's say you have a bathroom that is blue and you've never had a problem that the bathroom was blue. The bathroom's been blue forever. You are fine with it. In fact, some days you might have even went in that bathroom and be like, oh, it's such a lovely bathroom because it's blue, right? Now, this individual suddenly finds themselves not having any problems in their relationship. They have a good relationship. They have a good job. They have a good place to live. They've achieved their goals, etc. So they're technically happy. They've manifested what they've wanted to. Usually within about a week to 2 weeks of being happy and having gotten everything together, what's going to happen is I'm going to get a phone call. And they're going to be like, Papa, I have this really major problem. I'll be like, what? They're going to be like, my bathroom is blue. And I hate it. And every time I go into this blue bathroom, it makes me miserable. And it's the most, what color do the spirits think I should change it to? Should I color it yellow or should I color it orange? I need this very important advice, right? And this is just simply because they have no real problems. So what happens is when you have no real problem, your mind will make problems up. Things that are totally normal or okay, or have been okay forever, you never had an issue with it before, suddenly becomes a problem. Which is why when most people say, I just wish I didn't have any problems, it's just another perfect example how the mouth can lie. Because if you wish you had no problems, when suddenly you find yourself without problems, you stop making shit up in order to have a problem. But the mind always looks for a way to make shit up in order to have a problem, because the mind is uncomfortable not having problems. Any comments?
I mean, it's a reward cycle for people, right? Because having a problem makes them feel important or special or like they have something to work on or something to do with themselves. So they keep it. And they keep in cycles where, oh no, it's awful, I'm so busy, I must work on all the things or whatever it is that's bothering me. Oh no, I'm hugely depressed. Oh gosh, I just need all the help. And then there's nothing to do. And the part of them that says, you're only really important if you have a problem.
Or if you have the capacity to resolve problems. Which is why sometimes instead of making up problems for themselves, they go around to other people that they know and they take on their problems. And they make other people's problems their problems. Or they decide to start having a problem with how other people are doing their life or anything for themselves. Yes? That looked like a comment.
That was a question, but I'm not asking it. Can I ask, how often do people reach out to you for this situation? Is it like the really, really common conversation?
About where people have no problems, but then makes problems up?
Yes.
It's common enough. 90%.
I was going to say it's in the
90th percentile. It's in the 90th percentile.
Joy.
Yeah, I figure. Like, especially when you have some, like, a spirit, like, you're someone who can, like, actually help you resolve. Like, let's say you do have issues. You have things going on in your life that need to be resolved. They get resolved. Then they're left in this, like, void of, you're good. Just go on to the next step of development. But rather they, like, make little... And then about the same things, too. Like, things that they know that are part of their lives, whether it's in their workplace or their home life, like...
Or they choose things that it's just part of life. Meaning, like, for example, they choose things that there's nothing no one can do anything about.
There's nothing.
So suddenly they have a problem that there's not world peace.
Like, bro,
world peace is not meant to happen. It's impossible to have world peace.
How do you give advice to that? Like, honestly, because if somebody's calling you over and over again, they have the same problem over and over again, what can you say other than, you know, this is the same thing you've talked to me about, like, on a monthly basis for the last decade?
We help them resolve all their minor problems, their minor perception problems, their perceived problems. If there's someone who is willing to open themselves up a little further, then we start working with them on them. If we can work with them on them, then we can work on their perception problems, where they have problems in perception. However... Here's the true boil down to know whether your problem is real or fake. It's going to get real gritty here, okay?
Okay.
Basically, if you ate today, if you have clothing on your back, if you're not bleeding or halfway dead, if you're not heavily injured... If you have a place to stay, then you do not have any real problems. Everything else is fake problems.
It's a perceived...
It's all within your living in the la-la land of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Those are the only real problems because they impact your capacity to survive. Everything else are just random fantasies that you make up because, hey, fantasy land is so much funner than the real world, which is why people stay stuck within movies, video games, social media, etc. It's because your brain loves fantasy world. So... What really happens is that people have this really strong urge to die. There's this incredibly powerful death urge. And since they are too scared to kill themselves, they choose a fantasy land. That fantasy land allows them to die within the real world. The person that I spoke with today, their imagined problem was that their name was not placed in the obituary to their father. Now, this is an imagined problem because the obituary is not about you. It's about your daddy. It's not about you. Okay. Being upset about your name not being in the obituary is not really why you're upset. The real, either way, even had your name been placed in the obituary, you're going to be upset. You're going to be upset because your father passed away. Now, even that is a fake upsetness. You're really upset because you didn't take the time to appreciate and absorb your father while he was alive. That's where your real upsetness lies. Because if you had done that when your father passed, you would have been like, yeah, I'm complete with this guy. He had to go. I gotta keep moving in this world. I'm good. He can go on until we meet again, my friend. But it's that key word, all about responsibility. To acknowledge that would mean to have to take responsibility for not really absorbing your father or taking the time out to really get to know your father as a human being. So instead, I'm going to be mad at the people who wrote the obituary. So I can now throw my anger at them and my upsetness at them, even though the truth is I'm angry because my father died. I'm angry that my father died because I didn't take the time to really absorb my father. So I'm feeling like I'm missing out. But if I acknowledge that, I have to take responsibility. I can no longer be angry at anyone else.
Yes? Why is one have such an issue with taking, like, it's so looked bad upon, like, to take responsibility?
Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead.
People spend a lot of time looking for fault. And part of the reason that they look for fault, whose fault is this, who is responsible for this, is because fault tells them how they are allowed to feel about something. So if something is not your fault, then you don't have to, you can feel justified at whatever it is you want to do with respect to the person whose fault it is.
But there's a difference between fault and responsibility, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there like respond.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I was gonna ask what it was like. What the difference between like, because fault, I feel, isn't that where like you're like it's like a like fault, blame, shame.
Well, that's what people do with responsibility. It's mm-hmm. like they don't want it.
Instead of like, okay, now I understand what I did, and like this is I gotta like.
Fault is putting responsibility somewhere else.
Right.
Responsibility is taking accountability and saying you are the cause.
Right.
And then
fault is saying they are the cause.
But it helps if you believe that things can change, because I think that's also a problem people have with responsibility and fault, is that they don't really have any concept of things being any different. So they're looking for somewhere to land a whole complex of feelings and actions.
Yes. However, fault helps so that the responsibility to make the change again doesn't fall in one's hands.
Because it's not
their fault. Yeah, so yeah, exactly.
If it's someone else's fault, then it's not your job to fix it.
You're right.
If it's your fault, then it's your job to fix it. And if you don't fix it, you can't blame it on somebody else.
Yeah.
I had a really sad conversation with my mother one time on this topic. Right. My mother is very religious and very Christian and very conservative. And I don't know if you spend a lot of time around those guys, but they're real interested in cult.
They love it.
As a topic. Right, and I got to talking with her about forgiveness and redemption, and her position on it was that, I'm going to simplify a whole lot of hedging around. Even though she is a Christian, she does not believe that redemption is possible, because redemption would involve change, and she just does not see that happening. She thought the entire point of the Bible was that things don't change. And it really, that whole conversation was kind of illuminating when I was a kid, because it told me about the mechanics of responsibility and blame. And I am going to say that I don't mind responsibility as much now, because I know that I can get better.
Carry on.
Oh, well, thank you. I know that I can change. I know that if I accept responsibility for something, it means that I can look at it, evaluate it, maybe get a consultation, figure out what's wrong, and not do it again.
Right.
Which is a completely different position than I can't be responsible for anything because nothing can change. I can't change. I just do the same things over and over again, so I can't possibly take responsibility because there's nothing I can do but be miserable. And, you know, people do learn to take a certain amount of perverse enjoyment in their misery. They probably feel like they have to.
It seems to be, like, the common trend. Like, just, like, I don't know, just little stuff that I notice when I'm at work. Because that's a good, I don't know, my workplace environment's a good example of, like, you just see it all. Because you're around so many different people, like, just sticking to it. That's their whole goal when they come in for the day. Is it like, how can I, like, just start the day off fucked up and fuck it all up?
Now, your mom's concept of redemption there is very interesting. The reason why is that it's simply a workaround for her not to have to take responsibility.
Yes.
It's just, since things can't be redeemed, since I can't change anything, I'm therefore can't take responsibility.
And I can just do.
And then whatever happens, if I mess up, it's not my responsibility to fix it or change it.
Ah, that's the workaround.
It's a workaround.
Yeah.
So the people are constantly looking for a workaround from responsibility. How can I get away from not having responsibility? This is the same reason why you give the responsibility to anything that you have to do to someone else. Same thing with your emotions. You make other people responsible for them. You make other people responsible for them because if you were responsible, then you would have to admit that you chose to be angry. That you choose unhappiness. That you choose sadness. That you choose depression. You have to admit that you choose all those things. And as long as you continuously say, so-and-so made me, so-and-so made me, so-and-so made me, you don't have to, no one can blame you. No one can say, it's your fault. Someone who's clear, such as myself, know it's your fault. I don't have to tell you because I already know.
Yeah.
So whether you know or you don't know is not my problem. Yeah. I know. I know that every time that you're angry, it's always your fault. Every single time. Why? Because that's what you chose. You chose to feel angry about it. And you may not have had developed the personal power to choose.
Right.
Right? So because you didn't develop the personal power to choose, you feel controlled by it, so therefore you can say it's not your fault. It's still your fault because you chose not to develop your personal power. And so when you chose not to develop your personal power, you therefore chose to be at the command of something like the spirit of anger.
Yeah.
Not having more power than it. Mm. So when you say, like, so-and-so annoyed me, actually, no. You chose to be annoyed. It's your fault you're annoyed. It's your responsibility for being annoyed. And for not being annoyed, it's also your responsibility. But if you throw that responsibility onto someone else, that also then allows you to control that other person so that they can do things in order to make sure you're not annoyed anymore. But really, it's all you chose one after the other in order to go down that direction.
Yeah, by not developing your by choosing not to.
But I think it's important that, again, I find this incredibly hopeful as opposed to pessimistic because I know that there is a way to change.
No, in fact, it's actually, if you really listen to the conversation, for he who can listen, understands that it's actually a very empowering position. Because if you can realize that you can choose how you feel, you've just become empowered to actively choose your emotions and therefore choose your life experience. So it's actually a very powerful empowerment if you can take it that way. But especially if you're someone who shuns responsibility.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay? Yeah.
Especially you're going to hate this podcast. Yeah. This particular episode. And maybe even me for pointing it out how you continuously choose to be miserable.
And the thing that's really interesting is that you can't choose to shirk responsibility. You can think you shirked responsibility. You can point to other people and say it's their responsibility, but you can't ever actually shirk responsibility. It's there anyway, whether you like it or not, whether you acknowledge it or not.
No, whether you take it on or you don't take it on, either way, by not taking it on, all you simply do is put yourself, how do you put that, at the whim of everything else. But it doesn't take the responsibility away from you. Instead, it just makes it manifest in a different form. Either way, the responsibility shows up. It's just going to show up differently.
And he'll meet it again.
And again, and again, and again. Yeah.
So just get with it.
It's easier said than done.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's easier said than done.
But I feel like if you're listening to these podcasts, that like you do have like a better chance. If you're
No, you don't. No? You don't have any chance. Because listening to the podcast is not enough.
No, like being do it.
Listening to podcasts is not enough. Listening to lessons is not enough. None of that is enough if you don't apply it.
Right.
It doesn't matter how much you listen. There's tons of people that can listen, but not actually listen. Tons of people that can hear.
Right.
Right? In order to make a differentiation. Tons of people hear. But I just give you a perfect example. Sometimes I teach classes, believe it or not. And then a day or two later, a person will make a complaint to me that is directly related
to the class
to a demonstration that they did not apply what was taught to them a few days ago. So you can hear until you're blue in the face, but it's not going to make a difference unless you apply the work. You're going to say?
I was going to say, I think, and this is personal philosophy time, and I'm going to air my ignorance for a second. Feel free to correct it if it needs correcting. I think if we are ever to talk about mercy and the divine, the fact that we are given the space to learn that lesson is quite merciful.
It is. It's very merciful that you're given that space over and over and over to learn that lesson. So, considering that mercy, and that it is a mercy that gets granted like over and over and over, one should take that forward to understand that if one has to forgive other people's mistakes over and over and over, you didn't actually do not such a grand thing as your mind will tell you, like you've done some grand thing by forgiving someone so many times, or by showing mercy to someone so many times. Because over and over and over, generally speaking, the same lessons just keep getting repeated like a broken record.
I don't think we're capable of forgiveness, but I think that's a different podcast. And I want to make a technical differentiation in between what people call forgiveness and what we might consider forgiveness.
Well, I think this is perfect for a third podcast.
Okay.
So let's cut the recording here. And subscribe, y'all.